A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
So just like general conversation, it's not really formal, is it?
No, it's just a chat, yeah. This one's just a chat. It's
Hello, and welcome to this episode of Ramble Meets on Football Ramble Daily. As you've probably seen already from the title, it's with Watford midfielder Will Hughes, and it's a really exciting one for me because since we started this show, I've always wanted to speak to a current Premier League player, and it's been difficult in the past because, as you can probably imagine, top-level footballers are hard to get to and even harder to get long-form interviews with if you're not an official partner of the Premier League club itself, or, to use this disgusting media language for a moment, a broadcast partner, without a whole load of other people wanting to get in the way, vet the questions and generally make it difficult. But largely thanks to his agent Dougie, Will was willing to give it a go. He was also kind enough to invite us into his home to make the episode, and so instead of it being recorded in our studio where a huge majority of our Ramble Meets eps are made, it was recorded in situ in his kitchen, complete with his two lovely dogs sniffing around, his dishwasher going off, a wasp trying to sting us both, and all sorts of other things going on. I think it gives it a much nicer, warmer feel. Many thanks to Will and his agent for helping to make it happen. Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was a great thing to do. Anyway, this is the first of many new interviews we have lined up over the coming weeks and months here on Football Ramble Daily, and I really hope you enjoy it. You can, of course, let us know what you think at Football Ramble, or get me personally at Lou Karen Moore. Enjoy.
Will Hughes, footballer.
Will, what do you think is the biggest misconception from the public about what it's like to be a football player?
What it's like to be a footballer?
Yeah.
That it's all rosy and everything's perfect 24/7.
Yeah.
Definitely the biggest misconception.
But the reality
it goes a lot deeper than that, obviously, yeah. But I think that's definitely the biggest one.
Do you think people don't fully appreciate the human being aspect of it? Like, you go through normal life the same as everyone else?
Yeah, most definitely. I don't want to taint it and be like, oh, it's not all it's made out to be, because I wouldn't change it for the world.
Yeah.
It does come with its negatives, but that wouldn't stop me doing it all over again. I love it. I love every day. I think challenging. But as with everything, there are negative downsides to it.
Did you always know you were going to be a professional football player, do you think?
It was my first love when I was younger. And then as it came to 9, 10, I started getting to tennis quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I played that quite a lot, enjoyed it. And then it came to a stage where I kind of had to pick one if I was going to take it seriously. And my gut instinct was football, and it's led me to here. So I've done pretty well.
You like football more than you like tennis?
Yeah, definitely now. I've not played tennis for years. But
do you think you should have had a career in tennis?
Not to the extent of football, but I was that young though. It was hard to say.
Do you feel like you had to make a lot of decisions that were serious when you were quite young? Because I feel like I didn't really actually make any serious decision about my entire life until I was about 30.
Obviously, I didn't think it was that serious at the time. You're just doing it because you want to do it. But I think, especially nowadays, you look at the younger lads, people are getting snapped up at 12, 13 on good contracts. I think it is more nowadays a life-changing decision, whereas for me, over 10 years ago, it was more, what do I enjoy more? And that was it. Simple as that.
And but you were someone I remember as being really highly rated as a young kid, and you broke into the first team at Derby very early on. Compared to a lot of people, is that something that felt quite natural to you at the time, or did you not think about it much because you were so young, you were just getting on with it?
It was hard to a point of being that young, breaking into the team with all the other stuff that comes with it, not the football side of it. I enjoyed every aspect of that, but the media attention and people talking about things that weren't necessarily true. But I think I had the right people around me at that age to kind of bat that off.
Did you shut yourself away from that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think you have to, because otherwise it's going to affect your football, and ultimately that's going to be your downfall. Mm. When I went from 15 to 16, that was my big year, and obviously I wasn't expecting it to happen, so it did happen very quickly. But as I said, I had the right people that around me that told me to keep my feet on the ground, and luckily it stayed that way.
What do you remember about your debut for Derby? Can you use a bit of a blur, or can you remember it?
Mixed emotions.
Yeah.
The relic of football. I was 16, played Peterborough away.
Yeah.
It was. I can't actually remember how it happened, but I think we conceded. I came on in about the 88th minute and we conceded in the 90th, 91st to lose the game.
Is it your fault?
No, luckily it wasn't my fault. But the high of making your debut in professional football to then getting in the change room after and realising what's on the line and the stakes, and everyone just going mad in the change room. And I was sat there thinking, wow, this is what it's about.
Is it the first time you'd been in a first team dressing room on a match day?
Yeah, I think it was, yeah.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, because I remember being told the day before, because I was studying A-levels, had private tutoring when I was on a scholarship, and I remember being in a lesson and one of the coaches came in and said, you're travelling with the first team tomorrow. So I was a bit took her back and couldn't really concentrate.
I'm trying to do this.
I'm going. See you later.
Yeah, okay. Well, do you feel like, because I've spoken to players who have now retired, who are obviously a lot older, and they said that the attitude back then was kind of, we're going to give you a call up to the first team and we want to see if this can make a man of you. And there was no real kind of preparation or support for that step, if you know what I mean. They just chucked in there. Do you feel like you've got given a lot of, it was a lot more sort of detail than that in your time?
Not particularly, no. But I think that has its benefits as well. Like you said, they throw you in there and see what you've got about yourself. And I think, in a way, that shaped me as well. Because I wasn't expecting it, and they threw me in the deep end. And the players were there at the time. Luckily, kept my feet on the ground. And I think if you're eased into it, obviously that has its benefits as well. But I think you can look at it both ways.
Did you know it was coming?
I'd been training with the first team quite a bit, but I could never see myself breaking into the first team that quickly, no. No, definitely not.
And did it feel like a real like step up? Were you like, God, this is hard?
Yeah, 100%.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah. Even the training. I remember one of the first ever training sessions that I had with the first team. It was just a game, and I didn't track one of my runners.
Right.
And I got absolutely battered for it by a few of the players and the manager.
Right.
But coming from the under-18s, you get away with that, and it was
because you were one of the best players there. Is that why?
Not necessarily. I think just the atmosphere around the under-18s football. It was more fun. You're with your mates, and you get away with more things. But when you go and play the first team, it's a different level. And I remember thinking, oh, shit.
Did you? Yeah.
I was meant to go and enjoy that, but then I got absolutely battered on one of my first training sessions, and I thought, Jesus, this is what it's like.
Were you inspired by that? Did you think that spurred you on, or were you like, God, this is going to be harder than I thought?
Initially, it didn't really spur me on. I thought, God, I don't fancy this.
Yeah, okay, right.
So not what I signed up for. I thought it'd be easy. But looking back on it now, the more it happened, the more it like builds you up as a person and a player. So I look back on it with fondness, definitely.
Did you always have kind of confidence in yourself ability wise?
Yeah, 100%.
You knew you were going to be good enough.
Yeah, definitely. I think Nigel Clough believed in me massively, and it didn't put any pressure on me. At that age, I think you're going in there, you're being picked because you're a half decent player, so that gave me confidence and just, you know, did what I do.
So on the debut itself, you were you in the moment, were you thinking, God, this is tough? Or what about your first
swear on this or not?
Yeah, you can. Yeah. Yeah. You already have.
I was thinking that.
What about your first start then, when you've got a chance to take it in, when you're not coming off the bench late on, you're thinking, right, I've got to try and perform here. Are you present in the moment? Are you thinking, God, I've actually got to do a good job here? Are you on autopilot totally?
I wasn't. It was Peterborough again, the last day of the season.
Did you have a new contract? You could only play against Peterborough.
Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
Think about it now.
Yeah.
I remember the manager at the time, Clough, used to put the team sheet on in the dressing room on a piece of paper, so you wouldn't know until an hour before kickoff.
Right.
So I just casually wandered over to see if I was going to be on the bench, and couldn't find myself on the bench. I was thinking, oh, and then looked at the starting team. I was on the.
Yeah.
I was in the 11, so it was really nerve-wracking but exciting at the same time, because it was the last game of the season, wasn't anything to play for, so I could just go out there and enjoy myself.
Bit of a free hit.
Yeah, definitely.
Are you a Derby County fan?
Yeah.
You liked
it? Growing up, definitely. I was a Liverpool fan as well when I was younger. Yeah. But growing up in Derby, I followed them coming through the academy, and then getting to play for them was a big honour for me.
Could you feel yourself getting better as you played more games as well? Learning more, improving?
I think playing with certain players as well helped me a lot, and different managers had different ways of coaching me. I learned a lot from Nigel, how to be a person, how to be a proper human being. And he gave me a breakthrough which I'll never forget. And then other coaches like McLaren, he took my game to a different level in terms of on the pitch and tactically awareness. So different coaches had different roles in my career.
And you, as you went through that time at Derby, you became sort of more and more well known, didn't you? And was that an adjustment period as well? Or did you not really think about it?
I think even when I broke through 16, 17, there was, as there is with every young player nowadays, there was transfer speculation of, as soon as you're that age and you're playing at a decent level, people are going to link you with other clubs. And initially, it wasn't easy to deal with, because people expected so much of you.
Yeah.
When you're on the pitch, he's been linked with a top team, he must be unbelievable. Mm. And then if you had a good game, people would see that as, oh, he's bang average. You'd have to have an exceptional game to
right
for people, if you know what I mean.
Of course, yeah, and then position you play as well. So okay.
Because people got such high expectations of you, they've already made that judgment that he's gonna be a world beater. So it wasn't easy to deal with it at 16, 17.
Did you also realise quite quickly that you've gone from like a prospect who'd been given his debut and was starting to play to actually you're quite an important player for Derby now, which at a big club, decent team, were you aware of that, do you think?
To a point. I think when I was 18, 19, I felt like 29.
Did you?
Yeah. It took its toll on me, but I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the pressure to a point. Not only being at that age, but playing for a team that you'd come through at, and you lived in that city for the last 15 years, it was a big step. A lot of my friends were Derby County fans, so you could look at it two ways. You could just enjoy the experience and get on with it, or you could think, oh, all the weight's on my shoulders. So it went from having the weight on my shoulders to then realising that, you know, I'm in a privileged position here, so I just go and enjoy it.
Were you ever nervous before a game?
Yeah, definitely.
Still now?
Yeah.
But in a good way, not like a really crippling kind of way.
No, I've heard stories of footballers that get nervous in bad ways before games, big players. But no, I'd see it as a positive. If you're not nervous before, I think it doesn't mean you care enough.
Does anything sort of settle your nerves, or is just getting a touch on the ball early on and then you're
just getting on the pitch? When the whistle goes, you know your job and you get on with it. I think it's beforehand, maybe overthinking of what could happen, possibly.
Hmm. So when you kind of eventually moved up into the Premier League, was it a difficult decision to make to do that, or was it something you see as really vital for your progression?
Be careful what I say. obviously, I wanted to play in the Premier League, and the ideal solution at the time was with Derby. We'd been close on numerous occasions going through the playoffs.
Did you get your dog to come and talk to me on purpose to get out of this question?
He loves the attention. but it came to a head. Gary Rowett got appointed, and I was looking forward to playing under him, but for one reason or another, he wasn't really having me as a player, which I respected. He was honest about that. So I just came to the best decision for myself and the club was me to move on, and luckily Watford were interested, so it was a bit of a no-brainer in the end all round.
When you say that the manager wasn't having you as a player, what kind of player do you describe yourself as? Because you said, I've seen you say before.
I've definitely changed.
Well, so you've seen you say before that you felt like you're a bit more of a flair player in the Championship, and you can't really get away with that in the Premier League.
Exactly. No,
but how would you describe yourself as a player?
Now?
Yeah.
Runner.
Right, no. Yeah. A shuttler.
No, definitely not. I think I do a lot more of that because I think you have to. The concentration levels in the Prem are completely different ball game to what it was in the Championship, with no disrespect.
Well, tell us about concentration. What do you mean by that? When people are listening, what describe that to them.
Things that you wouldn't see with the naked eye from watching a game of football, whether it be at the ground or on TV, in terms of, you know, a yard hill there in a defensive position could lead to attack and lead to a goal.
So you've got to be properly switched on, like, all the time.
100%. Yeah.
That must be mentally quite tiring as well as physically then.
Yeah, definitely. And when you're in the Championship, you get away with it to an extent, because the quality is not as good. But when you're playing against some of the best players in the world, you give them a yard and you let the ball go through a gap, they're onto you and they're scoring a goal. That's it. Mm. That's the fine lines.
I've spoken to some other players who've had careers, and they said that when they moved from the Championship to the Premier League, it was kind of a bit like, what is this? This is like so fast.
Yeah.
Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, it's not fast as in hectic. It's more, it can be slow, but it can change in a second. You know, when the top players want to move the ball quickly, you're just spinning around, running around like a headless chicken.
Is that what you felt like to start with? Take a while to adjust?
Yeah, it was different because it was more hectic in the Championships in terms of everything was just, well, not so much now, because I think the quality in the Championship is very good.
Hmm.
But some of the games I used to play, and it was just the whole 90 minutes would just be one into the other, and there was no really structure to it. Whereas in the Prem, it can be slow pace, but like I said, within a second it can
change.
You can just up it, and you have to be ready for that the whole 90 minutes.
Did you ever? Because you said earlier you were really you're really convinced of your own ability, and you knew that you would be talented enough. Did you ever have one thing that sort of goes underplayed, I think, is this idea that you've got to be physically fit enough. Like I spoke to Dimitar Berbatov, and he said that he's naturally, people say, oh, you know, I didn't do much running, but naturally I'm not very athletic. I would always be at the back of all the shuttle runs, the back at pre-season. Even when I was a young man, I couldn't really do it.
When you got touched like it,
I thought he might be making excuses.
Doesn't have to jog.
Yeah, but is the physical side of the game, do you think you have to have a natural talent to be physically fit as well? Because you can't get away with it, you're not properly fit.
It's definitely becoming more like that. I wouldn't be able to tell you when that changed dramatically, but physically I think you have to be at a certain level to have a career. Definitely, because you'd have to be a ridiculously good player to to not be physically up to the challenge. And that's throughout English football, I think, especially in the Premier League.
Yeah, just because the athletic demands are just so yeah. much. Do you have like a certain amount of like numbers you have to hit in training and stuff like that for your physical fitness?
It's more structured now in terms of the fitness coaches. They plan loads, especially for pre-season. This week we're going to have X amount of high intensity running, this much endurance, etc. So it's very detailed. It's not necessarily done to the individual, it's more as a team.
Okay, so it wouldn't be tailored to you because you're at different levels of physical fitness. No, everyone just has to be at a certain level and that's the end of it.
Yeah, it's not has to, they just monitor it, and they once you hit a certain number in training, then they'll be happy with it, especially in pre-season, because you have to obviously work your way up.
What do you consider what would be success for you when you look back on your career? What do you sort of want to achieve?
That's a tough question.
I know you're young, so it's probably a bit boring.
I don't feel it.
It's a boring question from a man who's almost 40.
I think it changes throughout your career.
Because you played internationally at under 21 level a lot, right?
Yeah.
So presumably you got your eye on being an international footballer at some point.
Yeah, but I don't really have my heart set on it in terms of if I don't achieve that, then I failed, because I think it's the wrong way to look at it. When you're younger, you want to make it as a footballer, and that was it. And then once you become a footballer, it's a certain level you want to play at, and then certain honours you want to get, and it's a lot more detailed in terms of what you want to achieve. But I think it's a difficult one to answer, really.
So you just take
if I play in the Premier League for the next 10 years, I'll be very happy.
When you were a kid coming up, do you think that's what you're looking at, playing in the Premier League and perhaps winning a trophy or two or something?
Everyone does. No one, you can't tell me a 10-year-old thinking, I want to get a big money move and sit on the bench.
No.
Which is what happens, sadly. But
it's important for you to be playing games, then.
Yeah, 100%. I hate not playing football. When you're on the bench and when you're injured, it's horrible. You take it for granted when you are playing, because it can be a lonely place at times.
Yeah, being injured is tough, right? Every player I've spoken to says the same thing.
Yeah,
you 100%. Feel quite isolated. You're not part of it. You can't do the job you're paid to do, so it's tough.
Yeah, and it's hard trying to explain it, because you know people from the outside will say, "Oh, you're getting paid X, Y, and Z. You should be happy." But when it's your passion and that's all you've ever known, that's what you want to do. It is very difficult to comprehend it when you're not playing for a long period of time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/ramble.
one thing I like asking players is this combination between talent and hard work. How, because some people say, oh, it's all talent, and I haven't had to actually work that hard. But some players will say,
like
basically. But some players have said, you know,
he's one of the few players that can get away with it.
Right. But some players have said to me, it's like 15% talent, 85% hard work.
Yeah, you can't put, I don't think you can put a number on it. But especially nowadays, like I said before, you have to, the hard work and the physicality part of, side of it is becoming a lot more important. And unless you're ridiculously talented, then you're going to have to put the hard work in, otherwise you're not going to get picked and you're not going to play.
But even like Cristiano Ronaldo is known as being like a pretty good trainer, right? He works really hard.
Yeah, apparently so.
Yeah. But that's people, the people who prefer Ronaldo to Messi or whatever will say, oh, you know, Ronaldo's the right trainer. I mean, listen to Roy Keane, he's the best trainer I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And then he's got all that ability as well.
Yeah, and that's why he's been one of the best players in the world for, along with Messi, for the last 10 years, and it's frightening.
Yeah.
It's frightening. Really.
Do you find that you get better because you've got better players around you? Is that really noticeable?
Yeah. A lot. When I was in the championship speaking to, when I went away, the 21s, even speaking to them, it's, and playing with them, you get a different feeling. And I've noticed that since I came to the Prem. When I was first a couple of weeks training, the quality in the, you know, the application was a different level. And it doesn't necessarily drive you, but just you naturally become a better player from it.
Did you think at any point, oh God, I don't know if I can do it?
To a point, yes, because when I made the move to Watford, my career at Derby, I'd never really been on the bench that much, only in the last season.
Your dishwasher's done, by the way, mate.
I'm going to load it now.
Yeah.
Yeah, not, I didn't doubt my abilities, but more because I'd played so continuously through my time at Derby when I was fit, to then come to Watford and not even be in the squad. I knew I wasn't going to be an instant starter. I knew I had to work hard, but it kind of took me aback a bit. And consciously or unconsciously, it made you doubt yourself a bit. But you just have to keep your head down, work hard, and you get the rewards. And luckily enough, I got a break and did well, and I've not looked back.
When we talking about that move, we're used as football fans to having a lot of money bandied around and chucked at us on telly and stuff about transfer fees and all the rest of it. You move for, you know, maybe not massive money in standards today, but it is a lot of money, right? It's a lot of money.
Definitely.
That we're talking about X millions of pounds, right?
Yeah.
Is that something you think about?
Not anymore, looking at the transfer fees.
No. But at the time, you're not playing, yeah, I'm a so-and-so million-pound player, I better do something. Or is it just something that's not on your radar?
To an extent, yeah. Looking at it nowadays, it's absolute peanuts.
Yeah.
But when I did make the move,
well, they've got a bargain then.
Yeah. In the back of your mind, you think, when I was at Derby, obviously I'd come through the academy, so the club weren't losing anything, not invested a transfer fee in me. So it's always in the back of your mind when you do make a move for money that you kind of have to prove yourself and prove your worth.
So you are actually thinking about it?
Yeah, not massively, but...
You think you don't want to let people down because they put faith in you, basically?
Yeah, but nowadays, not at all.
Okay, right.
I'm nothing compared to some of the lads now that are going for, you know, 50, 60 million standard nowadays.
Yeah.
So it's scary, scary times.
And played with some good players in the under-21s as well. And was the step up apparent again when you go to international duty?
Yeah, definitely from Derby. It was mentally nice as well, refreshing to, you know, play with another group of lads and have time away. Like you said, I've played with a lot of good players under 21 level that have gone on to play for the national team and big Premier League team, so that improved me a lot.
Like, it's encouraging as well, because Southgate likes picking young players.
No, definitely. From the summer, is it this summer just gone, was it?
The previous before. Summer.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. God, my memory's horrific. Yeah, the majority of that squad I'd played with at under 21 level, so it gave me hope going into the season where, you know, if you do well, then you've got a chance of being picked. So It's good stuff for young English players, definitely. I think he's going the right way about it.
Feels like it's a little bit more joined up, right?
Definitely. You look at 5-6 years ago, and a lot of people in the media were slamming England. But I think that perception has been changed a lot throughout the last couple of years, especially the... Was it the World Cup? Am I losing it? It was the World Cup, yeah. Wasn't it? Yeah, especially the World Cup, you know.
Apparently you watched one of the games in Box Park, Croydon.
I did indeed.
Coming to my research here.
Yeah, I did indeed,
England,
yeah.
Beat Sweden in the World Cup in Box Park, Croydon.
That was a good day.
It's just around down the road from me, that.
Yeah, it's a trek from here, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think not only did it unite the footballing side of the country, but just in general, you see how happy people were.
Yeah.
Everyone was united, non-footballing people that wanted us to do well, and I think it has changed the perception of English football, and I think people are excited now, whereas before, years gone by, it's more like a bit draining to watch them, but nowadays definitely I think everyone's excited.
Do you know what it felt like as a fan? It felt a bit like you'd get ready to watch England, they'd qualify easy normally, and then if it didn't work in the tournament, it felt like the whole thing was be ripped up and started again, the new coach doing a different thing, and there was no joint up thing, and you look outside of that and you look at what Germany did, what Spain did, they felt like there was a plan there, you know?
Yeah,
and now it feels like we've at least got a plan.
Yeah, everyone's human. You look at Germany's World Cup, they were the robots, weren't they, going into the World Cup, and everyone thought they were gonna smash it, but they weren't up to their standards. So it does happen to the best teams, and I think there's a platform to build on with England. Like you said, I don't think it's going to get ripped up. They've got a structure and they've got a plan in place, and if they stick to that, I think they're going to achieve success, definitely.
It was good watching Germany get knocked out, wasn't it?
Yeah. That was a nice change.
Yeah, exactly. Do you actually, and this might sound a bit of a weird question, but do you feel like you are a big football fan? Do you actually like watching football?
Not as much as I used to.
Really?
Yeah. I think that's because you see the ugly side of the game, which I'm not going to go into.
Sure, no, you don't have to.
When I was growing up, I'd watch any football. I loved it. Even when I started my career, I used to absolutely love it. But now I think, you know, people talk about a balance between your job, football, and then outside of football, you have to try and switch off. And I certainly believe that last few years. I think it's...
Really?
Yeah.
So if you've got a game on the Saturday...
I'm not saying I do watch football still, but not nowhere near as much. I used to watch any games on TV, but now it'd have to be a good one to
really
for me to watch it.
So you don't get given like homework. You don't think, oh, Man City are playing tomorrow and we're playing them in like 3 weeks, so I'm going to watch it.
I think we know enough about Man City.
You feel like
I don't think whatever homework you do against them is like window after minute one.
Yeah. But see, you get given like video to watch and stuff, though, right?
Yeah, as a group we do, and then
you don't watch it individually on your own or whatever.
That's up to the individual.
Okay.
Certain players will go through it, but other players will just on the day they'll see what happens. Against the best teams, I don't think you can do much. You can prepare six weeks in advance for teams like Man City.
Should I not mention Man City again? Because I've got a question about the FA Cup final. You don't want me to ask
we'll pass on that. Yeah. Yeah, I think we did well getting there. I think the scoreline takes away from the fact that we had such a good cup run.
Oh, it's a shame. It's a real shame because it's amazing to get there.
Yeah.
It must have been a big, proud moment for you to get there.
Massively. But when you lose 6-0, it's not the best.
Were you particularly nervous going to the cup final because it was a big game? Did you have all your family down there and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, not as... Yeah, I was, definitely. Growing up, the biggest club competition in English football. And then I think you have to... It's difficult... when you're in that moment to appreciate it, looking back on it, and I think years to come I'll look back at it as a proud moment, but when you're in that time it's hard to appreciate what you've achieved
because you just got a job to do and you've got on with it,
and then you lose 6-0. is it different
playing at Wembley? People always talk about, I know the pitches are all sort of similar sizes now, people used to talk in the past about how the pitch felt bigger, the event felt bigger, it was hotter and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I know I keep mentioning it, but when you play Man City, it's a big pitch.
Yeah.
I've played there a few times against Tottenham, for Derby.
Yeah.
And once you play a few times, you do get used to it. But I think it's just the atmosphere takes hold. And
but a cup final is different to playing, say, Spurs in the league, though, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Even the semi-final against Wolves, the atmosphere was absolutely electric.
That
felt like a final itself, the atmosphere. But once the first whistle goes, then you have to, you do forget about it. It's more the warm up where you're trying to take it all in.
Yeah, but you've got to shut it out.
Yeah, you have to. Otherwise, you.
But you're not kind of conscious of what the crowd are doing. People are shouting. You don't really hear that.
Not particularly. Not.
Is that because you play in the middle of the pitch? So you don't
yeah, trying to stay away from that.
Yeah.
You shit. Yeah. No, in the warm up, you're not focused as much as you are when the game's going on. And obviously the fans aren't, it's not packed out stadium, but once the first whistle goes, I don't really notice it unless you're playing it.
But it's funny, isn't it? Because it feels like a crowd can really affect a game.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But you're just saying that you're not really aware of that at the time.
You notice I was on a sense of individual chance.
Right, okay.
But as a whole atmosphere, yeah, you definitely do notice when one team's on top, that replicates with the fans and they start getting on top as well. So you do notice that. Definitely.
It makes a big difference.
Yeah, it does. It does.
What do they sing about you at Watford?
I think it's just Hughesy.
Is it?
That's what it's been all my career.
Does it make you feel good when they sing like that?
Yeah, it is nice. It is nice.
Is it a big deal to a player, do you think? Is it important to you to be like a loved player with the fans?
I don't think it's important. It's nice to get respect from the fans. And I think 99% of football fans, as long as you work hard and you're honest, I think that's all they want. It's only the top clubs that they expect top performances week in, week out. But if you give it your all and you're trying hard, and I think that's all you can ask for, really.
And certain positions, I suppose, lend themselves to kind of more eye-catching things, don't they? So you've played a bit further forward for Watford more recently, right? Am I right in saying that?
No, I've been playing right wing. It's not my most preferred position, but I'm not going to sit here and say that I should be central, because we have got quality players at the club. So if I'm starting, whether it be right mid, left back, I'll put a shift in there.
But do you still feel like you can affect the game from the right?
Yeah, it does suit me. It does suit me because obviously being left-footed and not the quickest of players, I like to come inside and try and create things. So it does suit my game, definitely.
What's the kind of big aim for this season?
Sound cliche now.
tell me the big aim for this season without using a single footballer's cliche.
That's impossible.
Do you get given a list of them when you become a player? Yeah, do you? Yeah? Yeah.
I've got a list in front of me now.
You can't say at the end of the day. You can't say that.
From a personal point of view, just playing football. That's the worst one.
You want the lads just
play? No, but if
the lads done well?
I do want to score more goals and get more assists. That's something I've said for the last 3-4 years, but easier said than done. But my first aim is to get in the starting 11, because we've got quality players and it's going to be tough to get into that starting 11. But if that happens, then I want to score more goals, definitely.
Do you ever wonder, when you ever, as a footballer, you ever thinking, oh God, I hope I don't sign someone in my position?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
From a selfish point of view, I don't think it's necessarily right to think like that, but you are, at the end of the day, your own commodity, so you have to look after number one. If that improves my chances of playing, then yeah, it's not ideal if they're going to spend 70 million on a right winger.
No. Because I think obviously a lot of fans will just sit glued to Sky Sports News seeing if a player is going to sign for their team.
Yeah.
But I wonder if players sit there watching it thinking, I don't have another right midfield player or something.
I think that's the whole circus of transfer window. Yeah. I think fans love the thrill of it, signing new players, seeing what they're going to be about. But I think from Watford's point of view, they've done really good business the last few years. I think a lot of teams get caught up in having to sign someone just because it's transfer. Yeah, exactly.
Because the fans, it means a lot to the fans these days. It's become a whole new thing.
Yeah, it has. But even, I think it was last year, when I signed a couple, and De La Feria being the main one, which is a brilliant coup. I got him on the cheap.
He's a good player, isn't he?
Yeah, he's fantastic.
What's he like in terms of training, in terms of talent and everything? He must be amazing, because he's come up through
He's frightening. His ability is absolutely frightening.
Yeah.
And to get him for, I think it's 13 million we got him for, was absolute snippet in today's market.
Definitely. Are you ever consulted? They don't tell the players what they're planning on doing in terms of signings?
No. It's a whole different identity.
But if you went and asked, they would tell you.
I doubt it. It depends how close you are with the people who made the decisions.
You just feel like you're just getting on with your job.
Yeah, exactly. You have to. Definitely.
What? We talked about what your personal ambitions are. What do you think is realistic for Watford this season? Obviously, you finish as hard as you can, but I mean, you got to a cup final last season, did pretty well in the league.
Yeah, last season we had a fantastic year all round. The league position, although we finished 11th, that only happened because we tailed off towards the last four or five games. I think we only picked up 1 point from the last five games. Maybe that was because we had an eye on the FA Cup final, but previous to that, our record was really good in the league. I think we need to improve against the top six teams because we only picked up 3 points the whole of last season against the top six, and that was against Tottenham. So I think we do need to go into those games believing that we can pick something up. Other than that, I think another cup run would be nice.
Yeah, so you can avenge the disappointment.
Exactly, just not playing Man City again.
Yeah, but I feel like, I know you make the point about. About you maybe didn't do as well as you wanted to do against the big teams, but particularly at home now, what for the team who are thinking we can on our day we can beat anyone really? Yeah, because it's good enough on the day to beat anyone really. Your team,
I think the gap is closing between. It used to be, well, it still is the top six, but I think that gap is closing a bit more than it has done previous years. I think.
Because Leicester have done a lot of business. West Ham have done a lot of business. Wolves are a consideration as well.
Everton as well.
There's some big
teams in there. So I think you look on paper, people wouldn't have Watford down in the top 10. But I think that's why last season we went under the radar a bit. We had a really good season for what we spent compared to other teams. But a lot of the teams are paying big money now. So I think the top two, especially look at last season, Man City and Liverpool.
Yeah.
The gap between those two and then the rest of the big teams is widening a bit, I think.
Does the preparation change between, say, playing, I don't know, they had a big result against Cardiff last season, for example, between Cardiff and, say, a Man City, does the preparation change a lot in the week?
In terms of time spent, I think it's similar, but obviously the plans will be a lot different from playing Cardiff,
of course,
Liverpool or Man City.
But I'm wondering, I guess, how punchy the manager is about what the best way of going to get a result is, kind of thing.
It varies. Yeah. You know, the top six, although they're the best clubs in the division, they vary from each other.
Sure.
So you have to go about it in a different way between all of them. So
will your role that you have to perform be vastly different from week to week then?
Not vastly. The structure and how we want to play will still be there, but it'll just be minute changes as to what to hurt the opposition and how to stop them. But it won't be massively different unless we change formation.
Right, interesting. I've got to ask you before we stop, best player you've played with and best player you've played against?
Val Morrison with.
Really?
Yeah, ability wise.
Why? Just because he was so talented?
It's ridiculous.
Where did you play with him?
Under 21s, briefly. I don't think I played with him in a game, but I definitely had a few training sessions with him. And the natural ability he had, left foot, right foot, strength, agility.
What about a player you've played against?
Obvious one's probably Hazard.
Okay. I thought you might have just been going through Man City players then, picking one.
A lot of their whole team.
Hazard, yeah, that's quite a...
Yeah, it's pretty common, that, I guess, yeah. Trying to think of any ones that are a bit outlandish. Yeah, I think he has to be.
Because you can just go both ways, he's strong.
Yeah, quick. I played against him for Derby in a cup game and then obviously in the league as well. But just have to try and stand off him 2 yards and let him dribble sideways.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you go near him, he can be past you in an instant.
Go past you, yeah.
Yeah.
Is he strong as well?
Frightening.
Yeah, he's really strong, yeah.
Yeah, you don't realise it, but it's not necessarily his upper body strength, but the way he positions himself, so you can't actually get the ball off him.
Interesting. Will, thanks for your time. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
For giving up your time talking to us.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Doggy, there's a wasp again.
Can I just say, Will, I've never interviewed someone in a place that's got so many animals in it?
Because the doors are open. It's in your ear. Doggy, why have you not shut the door?
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news.
Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously,
man. Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.